under the breech, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Don't you love my radio voice?
I'm not sure. I mean, every week you say, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
And then you say, exciting.
It is exciting.
It's like, I think you are...
This is an exciting episode.
Pretty optimistic as to the idea that boys and girls are listening to the program and that anyone other than us would find it exciting.
Who said anyone else would find it exciting?
Nobody did. You're right.
But you see, I have a radio voice.
I don't see it, but I hear you have a radio voice.
But you hear I have a radio voice.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Very nice radio voice.
Yes, I do. And I actually worked many years to obtain this radio voice.
I did most of my voice work when I was an infant.
Really?
Yeah. I developed it over time. And then...
Well, actually, I worked at it on the radio. And for those of you who do not know, this person who is speaking to you, Jeff McClure, was once a professional radio announcer. And then he determined that professional radio announcers, all the ones he knew, were insane. And he determined that probably... The correlation there was high enough that he suspected that being a professional radio announcer would cause you to go insane.
Well, I think you went insane anyway, so I don't know what the problem was.
When I did this, which is back before the hills got dusty, when AM radio was still really hot stuff and FM was, yeah, maybe it's, you know, and the internet didn't exist. back when we were using rocks to make the radio work, we still are. Anyway, the point... That this was the fascinating thing. There were the stations that I worked at, and I actually worked on weekends and evenings and so on because I was going to college at the time. The radio announcers uniformly, the guys, the DJs, they called them DJs or announcers or whatever they called them, inevitably their on-the-air name was never their real name. Never.
Right. Right.
And when I said, what do you want to be called on the air? And I said, well, Jeff McClure. Wait a minute, that's your real name. Yeah, that's what I would prefer to be called because it's very confusing to have more than one name. Well, we have on-the-air names. And I said, yeah, well, my on-the-air name is the same as my regular name. I had to fight them not to wind up with an on-the-air name that was simple and Anglo-Saxon or something, which I thought Jeff McClure was a pretty good one. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. You're welcome to give us a call if today is the 24th of whatever, October, right?
All month, yes. It's October all month, and yes. 2015 all year.
And if there are flood warnings all around us, which there are,
yes.
Do not drive. You know this thing about do not drive across someplace where water is running across the road.
Right. It's pretty clear. It's good. It's really a bad idea to drive across running water.
But this is the point. I don't know if you noticed on the way in, almost everywhere water was running across the road.
Yes, but if you can't see the road underneath the water, that's when there's a problem.
Yes, particularly at night.
And it is a really big problem. The largest cause of natural disaster deaths in Texas is from flooding.
Yeah, and
people don't understand that it's more than fire, lightning strikes, any of those other earthquake type things.
Very frankly, if you come to a place that has low water crossing and has this little thing that says the water is this deep here or has a roadblock up, and this is what's amazing to me. Most of those deaths occur, at least that's what I read.
By violating the roadblocks.
By driving around the roadblocks into the rushing stream and then being washed downstream.
Right. More people die from that than from tornadoes in Texas. And there are a lot of tornado deaths. So please don't drive across running water. Please.
Yeah.
Unless you just don't want to be around anymore.
I think people try to drive across it. And in fact, they're driving through it and they just don't realize that that's a bad idea.
Right. Right.
And that's just...
Or when they do try to drive across it, they stop in the middle and go, my feet are getting wet.
Yes, and then the wall of water comes along and washes them down.
Yes, and sometimes it's not even a wall of water. It doesn't take much to make a car float.
Hey, from a very practical point of view, let's do a practical something. There's something probably I need to say here that's really important. Microsoft profit tops estimates, so Microsoft jumped like 6% on Friday.
10% on Friday.
10% on Friday. Let's see here. Oh, that's what I was going to talk about.
I've got some things to talk about, too.
Because I've got something I want to talk about. If you are offered or are considering something esoteric, something that's really cool, and only the really sophisticated people have it, and you should get it.
Be careful. Be very, very careful.
Then it's probably a good idea to note that UBS, which is a brokerage banking firm, is the most recent in a series, including almost all the rest of them, all the brokerage firms, to be hit with a fine. It was only $19.5 million for sale of securities that were designed, apparently, were advertised as an opportunity for you, the investor, to get a relatively high income rate with little or no risk. Those do not exist. These were structured notes, and this goes all the way back to, it takes the SEC a long time to figure out if a crime was committed. In this case, they decided that it was civil. And so they, apparently 1,900 retail investors were sold structured notes in which they lost a great deal of money. And the SEC settled with UBS, which used to be a Swiss company and now is a global company in the United States, for $19.5 million in fines, which is peanuts to them. Yeah, they're still being sold. Now, one of the more recent ones that's out there that are the people are still trying to sell, last I checked, was Master Limited Partnerships. And the Master Limited Partnerships, in many cases, involved pipelines. And the promise was that you buy this Master Limited Partnership, it's completely liquid, you can get your money back anytime you want it, and it will pay you like 8% a year. And people apparently gobbled them up and bought a lot of them, and they did okay for a while. Here's the point. The typical Master Limited Partnership is down about 27% this year. Now, what's happened is, in many cases, they're still paying, which means they're now paying out about 10%. So you got like a 10% dividend rate on this Master Limited Partnership. And what are the Master Limited Partnerships? In many cases, what they have is oil pipelines. And basically, you are getting a portion of the rent that oil companies pay to send oil through a pipeline, which sounds like a surefire, guaranteed to make way to make money, because in the United States, we use a lot of oil, we use a lot of gas, and the company that owns the pipeline. What happened is, though, these companies would go in, this is the Master Limited Partnership, would go in and borrow a lot of money, buy a bunch of pipeline, and they bought them at relatively elevated prices because the oil boom was going on and there was high demand and a shortage of pipelines.
Because there were a lot of Master Limited Partnerships all trying to buy the same pipelines.
And then they sold them to the public immediately, and they sold these things to the member of the public. Now, why are they down 27%? Because it's becoming more and more apparent that these guaranteed contracts eventually run out to begin with. And secondly, they were based on a high forecast demand and price of oil. And at least some of the companies that were running all this oil through the pipeline have stopped paying on their contracts. And nobody knows exactly where all of this is going to go, but the price for Master Limited Partnerships, in other words, if you... Let's just say that you've had one for a couple of years and you've gotten 16% and you realize they're starting to fall apart and you sold it right now, not counting brokerage fees, for 25% or 27% below what you paid for it. I don't know how to break this to you, but you lost money.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is when you sell it, it's a long-term capital loss,
which you can't take against your income.
But the income was fully taxable.
Right, exactly. This is right in the same. When I ended last hour with that talking about the asteroid mining company that's being created out there. If you take a long view on something and you say a long view on the market, if you're in the market a long time, you do well. That's a good way of looking at things.
Well,
okay.
If you're diversified in the
market. Right. Long-term investing, like well-diversified in the market. And they're not moving around in there. They tend to do well. If you look at the number of extremely wealthy families that have gone lots of generations being wealthy, you find that there aren't that many of them. There are a lot of families that got wealthy and then lost the money. A lot of families. A lot. I mean, that's the vast majority of people. You know, if you talk to somebody whose grandfather was the son of a billionaire, you will probably find that they don't have very much money. And if you think about that for a second, what you realize is that rich people use sophisticated investment styles that usually lose their money. And when I'm looking at the asteroid mining company as an example, I am a big proponent of the idea of going to space to mine asteroids. I think it's a very successful idea in the future. But the first company that does it is probably not going to do it right. They're probably going to mess up. It's kind of like, it's a new technology area. It's one of those things. They're going to go out there. They're going to try to do something. They're probably going to fail. The next people are going to learn from their mistake and go out there and probably fail again. And then the people after that might actually do it right.
And the people who invested in those first two companies will probably lose all their money.
Right. And so that being said, the people that are investing in those companies are very wealthy, because that's the only money that's being accepted for those startups, is very wealthy people's money. So they're taking a lot more risk with the money. And in these particular cases, it's startups. And the $12 million was raised by three people.
Well, the difficulty with that,
mm-hmm,
is that there are now alts. And that's one of the things I want to talk about, which is what you're talking about.
Alternative investment.
And they call them alts. And they say these are not market sensitive and they will stabilize your portfolio and they have a huge return. And I love in this case that FINRA filed against UBS.
FINRA is the Financial Regulatory
Financial Industry Group. Regulatory Authority.
Right. They are the regulators of
National
the people
authority.
That work on Wall Street.
Yes. The people
or
who
work
sell stuff.
Around
right.
Wall Street.
The SEC regulates people like us who work for fees and are fully disclosed, and the people who don't fully disclose and they take commissions are regulated by FINRA. Anyway, this is a quote from the FINRA report. The people buying the structured notes did not understand what they were, and the brokers selling the structured notes also did not understand what they were.
Well, that makes sense. If nobody is making any understanding of the event, then there could be nothing that could go wrong.
And the funny thing is, this is a quote. FINRA noted that some brokers actually thought UBS was the issuer of the notes, despite Lehman Brothers' name appearing at the beginning of the disclosure documents.
What could go wrong?
And they were shocked when Lehman Brothers went under and the notes became worthless.
What could go wrong?
Because they thought their broker-dealer was selling them. That is one of the great problems. And right now, and one of the reasons I mentioned this a little earlier, and, oh, actually I mentioned in the newsletter I just sent out, I don't think I've talked about this. Low interest rates are likely to continue for some time. Most of the world is in deflation.
We're in a little touch of
right.
it.
Right, and I say most, I'm even... If you listen to some analysts, even China is in deflation, despite the fact they're claiming they're in inflation. They're in fact, anyway, nobody knows what goes on in China. It's all a big guess. But definitely, the euro, the 2-year and the 10-year German issued euro bond.
Mm-hmm.
Are both trading at negative interest
right.
rates, and this is amazing. They're being traded and they're forecasting the yields, and the yields all have minus signs in front of them.
Yeah.
And this is what's happening.
You're paying the government to take your loan.
Mario Draghi, who is the head of the European Central Bank this
right
year,
now, yeah. For a very short period.
He had a little press conference and he said that, you know, they're going to be taking aggressive action to stem the increasing deflation in the Eurozone. And immediately the traders guessed that the interest rates across Europe would be lowered to which are you
could you turn down my microphone just a little bit? I'm coming through really hot. There we go. That's
okay.
Better.
The interest rates, they immediately came to the conclusion it was not going to be a future interest rate set by the European Central Bank were not going to be a negative 10 basis points, you were going to be a negative 30 basis points, which is 0.3. And this is astonishing to me. You realize all across Europe right now, if you are a large depositor in a bank, you have to pay. I'm serious.
Yeah.
The bank takes money out of your account if you make a deposit in the bank. If you make if you buy the equivalent of a CD with the equivalent of a jumbo CD like we have in the United States, $100,000. But if you buy a 100 euro CD in a bank in Europe today, 2-year CD, for example, they're not going to pay you interest.
They're
going to
have you pay them interest.
They're actually going to take money out of your account every month to pay them interest for your having a certificate of deposit, which they will penalize you more if you take out early. And this is the funny thing. The people in Europe are buying them like hotcakes. They really, the money is flooding into the banks. I honestly remember, it seems to me like a very short time ago, it was a theoretical question. Is it possible to have negative interest rates?
Yes,
nobody
it is.
Could figure out how it was possible, but they're having negative interest rates.
It's fascinating because this is what led in the Great Depression to people putting money in their mattresses.
Because they'd make more money in the mattress? Yeah.
Right.
And
you don't get charged to have the money in the mattress. Well, then you've got a problem in that you're not very safe with the money in the mattress.
And this is what happens in deflation. In deflation, if I have a euro today and I can buy something with it, I can buy more with it in a year. And if I can buy 1%, let's say I can buy 2% more stuff in a year with a euro than I can today.
Then it's better to wait for a year to buy the thing.
So if I put it in the bank, and the bank charges me 0.3%, I still make 1.7% on my euro, and it's safe in the bank. And
right.
I don't understand why they do that instead of the mattress. I guess the mattress could burn down because
right.
There is a book. The bed was on fire when I lay down on it.
Right.
Anyway, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Person Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. It's Chris in Georgetown.
Hello.
Hi, Chris.
Chris von Georgetown.
Guten Tag. Hey, I just wanted to say hi. I hadn't talked to you guys in a long time, but thought it'd be real neat that I just signed up for the Lyft company that does the rideshare company. I just thought their technology was really cool and it's an extra way for people, to earn money, that entrepreneurs that just need extra money. But I think the technology, and just wanted y'all to discuss, the economy and how things are changing and everything is going, but just how neat it is to be able to earn money even in the Obama economy, doing different things.
Like what?
It's all changing.
Like what are you doing to earn money?
I have a part-time job, but also earning extra money through Lyft. So you can go pick people up and earn money.
Oh, Lyft.
Right.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Money.
That's, it's sort of like Uber.
Yes. It's the same concept. Different
yeah,
company.
Yeah. And that's, it's very disruptive and
disruptive to taxis, but not for you. It's very good for you.
And it's, well, it's
right.
the old school stuff. The and this is, by the way, a destabilizing element that you're in the middle of that has to do with that thing you have that you carry around in your hand, your digital phone. Without that, you couldn't do Lyft.
Right.
And
Lyft says they're a technology company more than they are even a
rideshare
company. And that's the interesting thing about it.
If you look at the S&P 500, you look at the largest companies. Apple is obviously up there. So is Amazon, and so is Alphabet. Have you heard of Alphabet?
Alphabet is the Google company.
Alphabet used to be Google, and now it's Alphabet.
Well, Google is still Google, but Alphabet owns it.
Yes,
because
that's because they watch Sesame Street.
Right. This today is brought to you by the letter Alphabet.
Google is brought to you by the Alphabet.
The reason why they call it Alphabet is because they have a lot of things that they're going to do.
Yeah.
And the founders of Google still own the majority.
But
by owning the majority, or at least the majority of the votes, they wanted another company that they could have that ownership be in that is going to be doing other things other than just the Google area.
And there's a fascinating thing that just occurred. IBM came in with earnings 30% below expected.
Yep.
And Microsoft, that was formed for the specific purpose of writing a program so IBM could have PCs, came in and jumped 10% in value because they had earnings about 30% above that which was expected. There is a world of You know, what is it that Microsoft sells? You know, they don't even sell the boxes anymore. Yeah, you know, they just have a stream of electrons that comes into your computer. And the Apple is a manufacturing company, but the manufacturing company rotates around the digital stuff that's in the thing they manufacture. Other people have gotten into the phone business, and by the way, Microsoft did lose a lot of money in the phone business. They had to write off a lot of money this quarter because of Nokia.
Google's made a lot of money in the phone business.
So this economy is changing very, very, very quickly, and a lot of people don't like it. And matter of fact, we were talking on the way in here, one of the issues that we run into is that the institutions that were set up that we need regulatory agencies in the economy, and we need things like that. But the institutions that were set up are so integrated with old tech businesses that in many cases they can't move fast enough to make things happen. As a matter of fact, it's San Diego. It's either San Diego or San Francisco or one of the towns in California is considering an ordinance right now to not allow home sharing.
Right. That just went through Austin.
Airbnb.
Austin kicked it out and said, no, it's a good idea. Airbnb still happens. I have a Microsoft phone. A Microsoft phone that is one of their flagship phones built by Nokia, the part of Nokia that they bought. And the Windows 10 update, which went out to all of the non-Microsoft-owned phones back when Windows 10 came out for everyone else, is still not available for the Microsoft-owned Nokia. So there's legacy issues involved, even in tech companies, where they are clearing the ground ahead of them to go forward and do big new things, and yet at the same time, they have these big legacy companies that they're trying to drag behind them and say, we'll make it work somehow, throw some more money at it.
And I think we're likely to see more and more people employed in the manner that you're speaking of. But it takes a lot of agility, it takes a lot of ability, it takes a lot of willingness to do things outside the box, and it appears to be insecure, and that's one of the things that people don't like. On the other hand, if you'd had a job with Dell, and you, I know, have had jobs with corporations all of a sudden say, whoa,
yeah,
and lay off a lot of people.
Just think if IBM comes in with earnings 30% less than
they're going to be laying off a lot of people.
They're going to lay people off. Yes, that's what you do when your earnings come in less than you expect. You fire people and you try to figure out some other way of doing business.
Maybe that's why they want Donald Trump as president.
Does IBM want Donald Trump?
There's plenty of guys through my job seekers meetings that are tech guys, and we meet, and these guys are driving doing the Lyft to earn some extra money because these guys were ex tech guys making good money. And for whatever reason, aren't working there, but they need to make a living, aren't afraid to do it. And, you know, a lot of the new kids are, you know, they're seeing this and saying, hey, I can make, you know, $800 a week driving, you know, my car.
But,
and then I can do what I want to do, something else, and earn a little extra cash. So it is a matter, I think, of people looking and saying, it's not that the days are over, work for a company, get off security of the benefits and everything else, but it's the ability to say, can I do something that I want and have insecurity so far as, maybe benefits or insecurities this for the 401k, and those people that are willing to do it, I think, will have an opportunity to do greater things.
But they need to be flexible. They need to be very flexible because, let me tell you, Lyft and Uber will go away. They will be gone very quickly.
Why is that?
Because once cars start driving themselves, which will happen within the next decade, what is the value of having somebody who will drive a car for you to take you from one place to another when there are cars that will drive themselves from one place to another that you can call up on your cell phone, will show up, and you get in and ride there?
Yeah, it'll be just an Uber. Uber just doesn't have any drivers, or Lyft doesn't have any more drivers. They just have a car.
Well, it may be Uber, and those companies, you know, Uber had it all, and then Lyft came along. What I'm trying to say is one of the things, when I said you have to be very agile, is you're riding on the front of a wave.
Yeah, it's the
same.
And
that wave is very fluid by definition, and it's going to change. So you've got to be ready to jump to something else as technology takes over what you're doing.
Right. If you think back to the early 20th century when the tractor first started going out and plowing fields, it replaced between 20 and 30 people on the field.
Right.
And yet we don't have huge unemployment because people aren't plowing with a hoe or with mules because they retooled. And what it means, and we talked about this last week. We did. And
because of that.
One of the things that we talked about last week that I think is really important is our education system needs to be able to teach that same flexibility that you are encountering right now. How do you know what's next? How do you move to the next thing? We're still training people to spend 40 years working for the same company, even if that company is a hospital. That is not the future. The future is we need to train people to learn how to retrain, because technology is going to be coming faster. And that means that in order to maintain a good position, you've got to keep up with the technology. You've got to be ahead of the technology even to train yourself to the next thing that's going to happen. Right now we have Uber, we have Lyft, we have lots of truck drivers, and I'm seeing advertisements for truck drivers wanted everywhere. Well,
right.
10 years from now, no advertisements for truck drivers wanted will be seen anywhere, because truck driving will not be a field that you can make a living in, because the computers will outdo it. Why would you pay somebody $100,000 a year to stay in their truck all day long when the truck will drive itself?
But they may, if regulators have their way, require an operator to be at the controls.
They
may not pay them $100,000. Well, they may require, and the Teamsters Union may require them to be paid $100,000.
Well, see, that's the thing. At some point, some city's going to say, we're going to put in a non-driver truck lane to get all the trucks off the road that everybody else is driving on, and then you're going to have a non-driver car lane, and then eventually you're going to have a special lane just for drivers, and then you're not going to be allowed to drive your car.
There's going to be some, in truck drivers, I think there's still going to be, for some time, probably 20 years, there'll be a truck driver occupation that will be paid well. And the reason
guys were talking about the education system and how it needs to change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I met a guy at my kid's school that owns, it's called CPUSA, and it's Control Panels USA. Started it in Georgetown out of his garage, has a place in Round Rock that he makes these things. So the control panels will make it anywhere from an IV, controlling IVs, to controlling, electrical grids, to, food processing, everything else. And he says he's hiring kids out of school that go to technical schools that learn the process of how to do these things, get these guys on board, that you work for them for a couple of years, they end up coming into marketing or sales from really not a high school education, but a technical
a
college degree, but a tech type of degree, making really good money from a tech degree versus a university degree that doesn't mean much. But for him, it's like, okay, these guys have the skill to make these things. They know it. Then they get into the sales section or the marketing section, and they make a really good living without having a college education and not having that giant amount of debt.
And this is what
I think those are some changes that are going on.
I've actually told people that the issue is, there are two levels. Either you're going to have a lot of conceptual skills and be really good with people. That's something computers aren't very good at. Or there's a great potential in education in learning how to fix the technology that exists today and then staying on top of that and staying ahead of it, as you said, the technical side of repairing, really understanding what these highly technical things are doing. And that is T.S., I've said, somebody asked me, I had parents ask me the other day, grandparents actually, if I were to advise them on where they tell their grandchildren to go to college. And I said, all of the things being equal, the Texas, TSTC, up in Waco, is going to get you the best deal. And they were just surprised at that. And I said, the bottom line to it is, technology is taking over stuff so fast that you either have to get way ahead of it conceptually and do something that's highly high touch, high personal, which is initially going to be low wages, and then you work your way up, or you get an education fixing the stuff that's replacing other people's jobs,
or you get an education developing the things that are replacing.
Only certain people are going to be able to do that. And you got to be really smart and innovative and willing to take risks. And
the same people that are going to 4-year or 8-year college now to work as a doctor are smart enough to do that, and those jobs as doctors are going to be replaced in the next 40 years. The people that are graduating from medical school today cannot expect to have a whole career as a doctor.
I have seen Star Trek.
That's a hologram.
When I went to my job seekers meeting, that these guys come in and they talk, you know, these are headhunters coming to these talks or technology people, and this one guy did a graph on where Texas was back in basically the 1990s to where it is today. And originally, if you look at the map, and he went by county, everything else, you know, we're manufacturing and oil, gas, service companies. And then he fast-forward all the way to, like, basically 2005 or something that to now, and he says we're a healthcare state, essentially. If you look at all the things going on, that people – and he looked at it by who's hiring and who's posting all these jobs. Looked at this giant list of, you know, all these nurses to food service to all this other stuff, which is really interesting how Texas has changed its model of gas and oil manufacturing and all this other stuff to healthcare, to technology, to now it's, you know, it's truck driving because things are being made and people have to haul them.
Well, we got a break for commercials, Chris. Thank you very much for calling.
Appreciate the call.
And try to stay out of the floods, okay?
All right, see y'all later.
Bye-bye. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And when the commercials are over, you'd like to give us a call. You can call us in here at the station at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And that's all, presuming that today is Saturday, October 24th, 2015. And we'll be back on the other side of these important words from Town Square's sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if today is Saturday, October 24th, you're certainly welcome to give us a call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we're here and you're there, and it's supposed to still be raining out there somewhere. And water is running across roads, and we suggest that you not drive into water that's running across roads unless your life insurance is thoroughly paid up and you are tired of living.
Right.
Under those circumstances, it
not to be confused with retired living. Retired living is not the same as tired of living.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably
pieces of
retired would indicate tired twice.
Right. If you can be tired more than once, then you should be okay.
And again, I mentioned this before, but I'm still somewhat astonished. I guess I'm old enough that I'm having trouble dealing with new facts. A little article here from Financial Times. Yield on two-year debt now stand below zero for almost every member of the Eurozone.
Right. That concept of a negative yield, we just got data from Social Security and from the IRS on retirement contribution limits for 2016. They haven't changed. There's usually a cost of living adjustment that allows you to invest more money than the year before. Well, that's because we're not having inflation right now. And that's a little scary. It's more than a little scary, because if we have deflation, that is a lot harder on lower income people than if we have inflation. Inflation is actually not too horribly bad for lower income people. And that's a big issue, and one that I don't think people are aware of. I'm just hoping that Janet Yellen really is on the ball. That's why she didn't raise interest rates this last time around, is because we're seeing anti-inflation. We're seeing deflation happening.
Well, the little article in here says analysts at Royal Bank of Scotland expect German yields to sink to a negative 0.4%. I mean, my brain is having some degree of difficulty.
The only way to reverse deflation is if people spend money. And what we're seeing in the United States is consumer spending is going up. People are beginning to buy houses again. You were mentioning those statistics. Those are all good things to fight deflation. Those are all good things that are not happening in Europe, and they're not happening in China right now. We're having consumer spending people are getting confident again. And we've been talking about the culmination of all of this data that we've been watching for years of people getting ready to buy things, people's savings accounts getting bigger and bigger, and people's credit card balances getting smaller and smaller. That trend has continued. I expect this Christmas to be a pretty amazingly good Christmas.
I hope so. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Enjoy the show. I read last week that margin debt on Wall Street is at an all-time high, and the article mentioned this was one of the biggest threats to the equities market. I'd like you guys to weigh in on that. Thank you.
We'll look for that. That's that, very frankly, I've not seen anything on that, so we're going to check on it. You have to be careful with those specific statistics.
Yeah. April had a record high.
April.
Yeah. We're now 11% lower than that. And if we look back, if we adjust for inflation over the same time period, we're not at an all-time high. We wouldn't have been at an all-time high then. The S&P 500, as it's come up, as it's recovered, has removed a lot of that margin debt. Let's stop a second and say, because there's a lot of people out there that are going, what the heck are you guys talking about? Margin debt, what does that even mean? A lot of people loan money to people to buy stocks or to sell stocks. Sometimes they loan stocks to people to sell. And that gets into an area where the person that's selling the stock may not own the stock. Well, eventually they have to pay back that debt. The people that are buying stock may not actually own the money that they're using to buy the stock with. Well, eventually they have to pay back that money. And when a lot of people are doing that, the debt on the market gets to be something that people worry about, because if there's a downturn in the market, what you see is a bigger downturn than you should have had, because people, if you get a loan from someone and it's to buy stocks, for instance, and the stock prices drop, well, the law says that you have to have 50% of the value of the loan as collateral. And if you drop below that number, you've got to sell stock to get back above the 50%. Well, that causes you to sell stock that you don't think it's time to sell yet. It causes the market to drop further than it would have. And while the 11% number, 11% down after the inflation-adjusted record high in April, I'm gonna look a little bit further. So you talk for a little bit. I'm gonna tell the actual debt amount as a percentage of the market. So if you,
well, let me say something else here. When we look at the dollar value of margin debt, and we say it's at an all-time high, the nominal dollar debt, and it was in April at all-time high, it's almost meaningless. And the reason I say it's almost meaningless is the only way to effectively measure something like that is the percentage it equates to of the value of the market. And in fact, I just looked this up. In a couple of months ago, it hit, if you actually approach it from that perspective,
as a percentage of the cost of the market,
right?
Yeah, it is not an all-time high.
In fact, it hit, if you come from 1995 to the present, I'm just looking at an article on this right now, in August it hit an all-time low. Not all-time, but it hit from 1995, which is the first place that this particular author could find data. That's the earliest they could find data. It, as a percentage of the value of the market, in April it hit a low. Now, obviously, if the dollar value of the S&P 500 hit an all-time record, it did, by the way, in April and May, then it's entirely possible that the margin dollar value also hit an all-time high. It did. But when we look at how much money people are actually borrowing as a percentage of the total market, peanuts. 1990s, it was really quite substantial,
yeah,
as a percentage.
One of the important factors here is when we measure, for instance, debt, any kind of debt, we measure it against income, or we measure it against the collateral involved. The collateral value has come up over the time period faster than the debt value has. So that's an important factor. And it's really, you know, the statistical jargon, it's really easy to make something sound scary. And when we're talking about the current level of debt, we're back, if we're looking at it as a percentage, we're much lower than we were in the 90s. And I'm looking at chart after chart after chart that's backing that up. If you look at it as a total, it's kind of like looking at the debt of the United States as a total and comparing it to the debt that we had in 1950. Even if you would adjust for inflation, it looks like we have a massive amount of debt. But if you look at it as a percentage of GDP, we're, you know, deficit as percentage of GDP and overall debt as percentage of GDP, we're actually in better shape than we were back then. It's just that things have changed. Our economy has grown. And as our economy grows, if we don't measure the debt against the economy, if instead we're looking at the debt against what we used to have, even if you adjust for inflation, you know, old Baldy across from me is often telling me about how his most recent car purchase is, you know, twice as much as his first house. That's inflation. Pull out inflation, and you still have a car purchase that as a number compared to your original income, that's completely unaffordable. Well, your income's come up a lot. You're not at the same place you were as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army. You're now an adult, fully adult, successful person that's able to afford a better car.
And incidentally,
our economy is the same way. And the stock market has gained in value enough. There's enough more people purchasing into the economy, into the stock market, that the number of people doing it with debt is not a big issue.
The other thing is, just found a Bloomberg article that the margin debt indicator is absolutely non-predictive, which I thought was interesting.
Well, it's predictive after the fact.
No, I mean, what they do is they look at it and say, high margin debt, this is what the article in essence says, in no way predicts a market fall, because they've actually gone back and seen when margin debt is a percentage of stocks traded.
No, it predicts the past.
Oh, okay.
I think that's post-dicting. Margin debt is a post-dictive.
So the issue, there's lots of things that are fundamentally things to be afraid of with a great deal of legitimacy that we need to be prepared for. And I'm going to give you an example. Let me explain why. And again, I'm apolitical. But we had in 2011 and in 2013 some significant market downturns. And
oh, is that what happened?
Yeah, and those downturns were both generated very clearly by the Congress of the United States failing to pay, basically causing the United States to temporarily default on certain obligations. We got our credit rating lowered. Now, we have a very, very high correlation here. In other words, if the United States of America, if the Congress of the United States, over ideology, makes a decision that the United States should not pay the bills that the Congress of the United States ordered the Treasury to run up, this causes a confidence crisis around the world and markets will decline. That should be feared, and the fear should be constructive and recognize that the possibility exists. Right now, very frankly, that possibility exists. We're coming up on two different dates in November when if there's not some kind of compromise, which is a dirty word right now, in the House, the conservative caucus has stated, members of the conservative caucus have stated that they want to shut the government down, and they really do apparently want to shut the government down.
I'm hoping now, this is going to get me tarred and feathered in some groups, but I'm hoping that Paul Ryan becomes the next speaker.
So am I, because one of his things to the he actually wrote them officially and said, if you threaten to shut the government down, I will resign as speaker. Let me warn you in advance. I want a promise from you: no government shutdowns. Now they haven't officially given him that go ahead, and he hasn't officially accepted. So I'm hoping at the beginning of next week they will go for that. If they do, smooth sailing. And I'm not trying to knock that. I mean, if they want to shut the government down, fine. That's their business. Shut the government down. They're in the business.
It's really, really, really bad for the economy every time they do that.
But it is their business. I mean, that's why we elect them. And if we want to keep electing them because we want them to shut the government down, that's democracy, and that's fine. Here's the point. There is an extremely high correlation between market declines and the government not paying its bills.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's an indicator that I could say with complete confidence is one we should look out for. The other ones that we should look out for are the leading economic indicators.
Right.
Which don't get a lot of good press because right now they're not at all scary.
Right. They actually look really, really good going forward.
I quoted probably the number one driver in our economy. If you had one single thing in our economy that drives things, it would be housing, residential housing. And everything we see in residential housing is good. Now,
and
admittedly,
I'm anecdotally seeing a lot of people that have been saving money for the last 6 years to put a down payment on a house. They're not doing this knee-jerk thing of I need a zero down payment loan that I can never afford anymore.
Are we going to get a big boom out of that? No. Let me explain why. Across the country right now, and this is in a way sort of a backwards good sign. Across the country right now, builders are saying, we can't build houses as fast as people want them because we can't find workers.
Because a lot of the people that used to work on the job sites were older illegal aliens that have left. And they've gotten even older since they've been gone, and they're not coming back.
There's a lot of factors in there. A lot of people who were not even illegal aliens, but from Mexico have returned to Mexico.
Legal aliens that have returned, yeah.
By the way, we've had the largest exodus in the history of the United States at this point. And we've had the most number of people who are here illegally leave and not come back than we've ever seen.
This is something that when the Big Fence proposition was put forward, what I said, and I'm just completely non-political, looking at demographic reports throughout history, when you put up a wall to prevent people from entering, your population drops. This is kind of interesting statement, but that's what happens, and our population dropped. Our population of immigrants dropped during the Great Recession, and we haven't been able to replace it. So if there's a quality issue with houses or a quality issue at restaurants or a quality issue with cleanliness at hotels, if you look at when the bed bug issue started popping up as a major event, what you'll find is it corresponds rather nicely with an export of all of our imported workforce.
It's fascinating to watch. But there's a positive thing to that. If you own a house, you probably notice that your houses have been rather flat in value for a long time.
Hopefully they stay flat as far as their level of the foundation.
Yes, but here's the point. Because of the shortage of construction workers and the rising demand for housing, and by the way, there's something other than the illegals, too. There's a whole group of young people who never came into the construction industry during the bust.
Right.
They didn't learn
to build houses. They've chosen other careers.
This shortage of workers actually is causing, across the United States, and I just quoted that a few minutes ago, the average residential house rose 5.6% in a essentially zero interest rate environment. And that's, if you own a house, that's good. If you're trying to buy a house, that means you need to have a big down payment. And man, there's lots more I'd like to talk about, but we're running out of time.
We're out of time. I guess we'll be back to talk to them at other times
in
the future.
One thing that came up is really, really critical. And just take my word for this. If you know somebody who's not investing in a 401k, 403b, IRA or whatever, to the maximum amount they can, and they're young, tell them to get started. They're going to need to get a head start on this.
Social Security is not going to be there for them.
And they're going, well,
for me, either.
It'll be there for people who are really poor and would otherwise starve. But I think it's really important to get investing. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, if you would like to contact us off the air,
then locally you can call 947-1111.
Or you can reach that same number, same source at 1-800-914-7526, 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. We get a lot of good stuff for the radio from that. So until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.